Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Well, here's hoping they don't kick us off the air for a week, because the last time we were on the air, we were on a three-game winning streak.
And then we took Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday off, and all of a sudden it's 0-2-1 in the last three.
Right, which means tonight's really important against a Colorado team that is also, like so many other teams, including Buffalo, finding it very hard to establish long stretches of really great play. The Habs come in with just one win in their last four, and they have been extremely up and down the mountain so far this year.
Well, I think that we may have solved why the Sabres can't score goals right now, because we weren't on the air. But, I mean, that may be not something they'll discuss in their pregame meeting.
Unlikely?
Unlikely to be discussed in the pregame meeting. Oh, by the way, guys, Sabres Live is returning on the air today, so we'll be fine. But there's two things that can be discussed and talked about within the locker room. Number one is the fact that goaltending with Colorado has had their issues. Now, Georgiev has had some good games of late, but then it's hot and cold, right? But when you have an 875 and an 878 save percentage, the two goaltenders on the roster for Colorado, well, you look at it and say, okay, well, maybe that's going to open up opportunities for the Sabres to create, to score, to find the back of the net. But the biggest part of all of that for me is, I know why the Sabres aren't scoring.
You do?
It's easy. Is that they are not getting to the middle. They're not getting to the slot. They're not getting in areas where they can score, or not enough. Mm. Right, Tage Thompson has gotten there, hasn't been able to find the back of the net since his return. But Lindy Ruff has mentioned, well, you know, a little rust, and I think that if you gave Tage that same shot against Minnesota and other opportunities, probably doesn't hit the goalie in the chest. He mentioned the 5-0. I'm like, Tage probably finds the top of the net a lot faster than the 5-0, but still, probably finds the better area. But when you are 20th in the league in shot attempts from the slot, a shot on net from the slot at 5-on-5, and you're 30th in goals from the slot at 5-on-5 in the last seven games, well, you know, the numbers are going to tell you. You got to get to the middle of the ice more, and you got to put that as a priority. So that's where the problem is right now when it comes to scoring.
So the overall numbers, and it's hard to compare this current sample size, which is, you know, almost a third of a season compared to the entirety of last year.
Yes.
But just for perspective's sake, because we talked about this the other day, the Sabres are scoring, even in this little, you know, with this latest blip, they're scoring at almost exactly the same number as last year. Last year, they finished at 2.98 goals per game. That ranked 23rd.
Yeah, that's tough.
This year, they're scoring 2.96, so like hundreds of a percent lower. They're 18th. So they're up in the league rankings despite scoring just a hair less. Now, the flip of that is, last year they finished tied for 11th in goals against, with a 2.96 goals against average. They're tied for 13th right now, which is barely a change, at 3.04.
Yes.
So, you know, like, it's just, it's...
But it's trending in a better way defensively.
We think, because clearly, at this point last year, they were half a goal per game worse. And obviously, we know, well, you're sitting there, well, how did it get so much better? We know how it got better.
Luukkonen. Second half.
Right after Christmas, and from that point on, right? And so, you're seeing pretty consistent results from Luukkonen. And year over year now, and obviously Reimer hasn't really missed a beat at all in his two starts. And you mentioned the Colorado goaltending. Scott Wedgwood is on the roster. He's not played a minute yet for the Avs, so his numbers don't factor into why Colorado's had such a tough go. But,
well, even if we used Justus Enninen, who got traded for Scott Wedgwood to Nashville, like, I mean, those numbers were
Are
pretty
worse.
Much, yeah, they, so it's not been good. But that's all the 5-on-5 aspect of the game, right? And look, we know that, for me, like, I look at the Sabres' last seven games. And why do I look at the last seven games? Because that was after a 4-3 win against St. Louis, where in the last seven games they've gone 3-3-1, but four of those games they scored two goals or less.
Yeah.
Right? In the previous 14 games, they had only scored two or less in two. Imagine, like in 14 games, two or less in two games in the last seven, four times, right? But yeah, okay, the Thompson injury affected a little bit of that, but now Tage is back. Everybody is looking to, okay, let's get right back to where we were. Mm-hmm. And if 5-on-5 doesn't work, Duffer, then the power play. You have to think, okay, now the skills, is it, you know, you're going back to your first power play. You're going back to what worked. Well, the numbers are even worse in the last seven games on the power play. And that is a big problem. And they haven't scored a power play goal in five games now.
Yeah.
They're 0-for-13 in those five games. So when I look at the power play, it's again the same thing. 28 in shot attempts from the slot, 27th in shots from the slot, 27 in goals from the slot. And one thing that we've talked about early in the game, in the year when they struggled, was possession in the offensive zone, entries, being set in the offensive zone. They are 29th in the NHL right now over the last seven games in percentage of time spent in the offensive zone at 61%.
Are you including, because I think you're off by a game. The St. Louis game goes back eight.
Yeah, I'm not including the St. Louis game.
Okay, I thought after, you said the St. Louis
right
game.
Right after the St. Louis game.
Okay.
Because I'm like, they scored four in that one. It was an OT, you know, win. But I'm saying right after St. Louis, the seven. Because it started with the Flyers. I feel like the Flyers was like, eh, that wasn't that great a game. And then after that, they go into L.A., they win 1-0, they get three in a row. But that Flyers game was the start of the little bit of a down offensively, right? But when you spend only 61% of the power play time in the offensive zone, that's for every 2 minutes, you spend about a minute seven, a minute eight in the offensive zone. Like, that's not good enough. Like, you have to spend more time in the offensive zone. And all the other numbers are reacting to that because you don't have the shots, you don't have the quality, the quantity, you don't have the volume, you don't have any of it.
Right. So what do you do about the power play specifically as far as which players do you lean on and do you change things dramatically, rely on the second unit more? Like, obviously that's unlikely to happen, but, you know, we did talk about Owen Power the other night. Like, hey, is he going to score a power play goal at some point? We know the pecking order here when it comes to Sabres offensive defensemen. It's Dahlin who's going to get the bulk of the power play time, but I think everyone knows that with more time, presumably Power and Byram would be very capable, right?
I would think, I mentioned it the other day, that Byram, I would consider putting him on the power play right now. And maybe you have Power and Byram on a unit. What happens then is, okay, so you're using Dahlin on one unit. You could use Power and Byram on the other unit. And then, so you got to, you know, three defensemen that are being used, and then it kind of affects how you play after the power play. But if you score, you don't have to worry about it because then you can go right back with whoever you want. Right,
right.
That's the big thing. And I would consider maybe even the very first power play, depending on who was on the ice when the penalty was being called and what's the situation in the game, throw in my second unit first because I feel like the second unit has had more possession time in the offensive zone for the 35, 40 seconds that they've had to work on the power play. First unit stays a minute 10, a minute 15, a minute 20, whatever. And then the second unit goes on and they've had better looks, in my opinion. So I think a couple of things I would adjust. I probably would go Power and Byram on the second unit. And I wouldn't hesitate to say, you guys go out first. Lead the way. Let's see. And then if it works, it works. And if it doesn't work, you can always go back to the Thompson-Dahlin unit to go first the next time. But I would shake it up a little bit in that sense.
Five-game homestand starts tonight. Colorado, Winnipeg, Utah, more Western Conference opponents to start the stand. And then it's Detroit and the New York Rangers next week. And Detroit right now dealing with some chaos in the crease with a couple of injuries.
I got a call. No, somebody called me.
3-2-2 are the Wings in the last seven.
Newsy and CVY did not call me.
You never say enough nice things about Newsy to have him reach out. But they're up against the Bruins or the Red Wings tonight. And the Bruins are obviously improved with the coaching change, which, of course, has seen better goaltending across the board. They're 4-2 in their last six. This homestand will ultimately end a week from tomorrow against the New York Rangers, a team that has lost 6 out of 7. But that's a long ways off because this is the most important game right now, and it's trying to figure it out against a Colorado team that, as mentioned, has one win in the last four. It's Native American Heritage Night, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino, so lots of, you know, ways to get involved in tonight's game and learn more about the Native American culture in our community, Kevin Nephew from Seneca Gaming Corporation, the president and CEO, is going to join us on our intermission broadcast tonight on MSG. And
he's got great energy. I always like when he comes on the
amazing
set.
Amazing energy, and we're certainly going to feel that in the building tonight.
I will also be at Seneca Thursday for the pregame show against the Jets. And there will be alumni there, Rick Vive, Donnie Edwards, Pat Coletta signing autographs. I'll do the pregame show from there. So I love that. I love when we have different things and you know, other aspect of our community being showcased and in the games. And so having Kevin on in the intermission is going to be fun tonight.
So you mentioned seven-game window here where they're 3-3 and 1. I think it's fair to say that the bookends of that seven games were probably the least enjoyable games for the team, the Philadelphia game and the Islander game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the coach has been very positive through any of these challenging moments, but eventually, in his description of Saturday night's loss to the Islanders, he said they got to a place that was almost unrecognizable and they weren't playing the right way. So,
which was, I don't want to say it was an odd comment, but I think it was
100% accurate.
It was 100% accurate. But
think at any point in the third, after the shorthanded chance for Cousins, that they were going to come back in that game?
No.
I didn't think so either.
No.
And that's why Lindy's words to me were like, oh, yeah, like I get it. Like he was seeing what we're like.
They had just done it the day before against Vancouver, down 3-1 and being able to get up.
Right.
And this
I think
one,
that's,
it was like,
yes.
No, that's not going to happen.
Right.
But Lindy's words, a lot of coaches don't like to let that out of the bag, saying we got to a game that we don't know how to play. That was his words, basically saying, you know, we ended up working ourselves into such a bad spot that we were playing a game that we like.
Well, they played into the Islanders game.
Yeah,
is what
it's
he
not
was,
like basically it, yeah. like it's like, what is this that we're trying to do right now?
Mm-hmm.
And we can't play that way. And look, I get it. Like, you know, Sorokin made a few saves. The one on Dylan Cousins was huge. But that Flyers game and that Islanders game's very different. Like the Minnesota game coming back from the road trip, losing 1-0 with mm-hmm. the amount of chances that they had and the way they played. I'll take that any day of the year, right? Like, I mean, the results is the results, but that way to play the game, fine. The one against Vancouver, it was okay. You pushed late. You got a couple of goals. You had the Thompson chance in overtime. You didn't get the 2 points. But the Islanders one was, like, not pretty hockey, and it's unfortunate because you could have said, okay, let's get right back on it here. James Reimer played well defensively. It was good again. You give up two, really, but it was an ugly, ugly type game.
But the point of all this is when you have the results, i.e. lack of production like last week, being blanked in two of the three, and we certainly saw it in games, and especially Saturday, the adjustments to try to get any and all going up front. Zucker is now on a line with Thompson and Tuck to get things going today. What do you make of that?
What I make of that is I think that Lindy Ruff is looking to see, okay, let's see how we can get to the middle of the ice. And JJ had been kind of on and off since the Thompson injury and just doesn't look like himself right now. So Tuck has been going, and if it wasn't for Tuck, I'm starting to ask, like, whoa, where would that be? He's been good. But at the energy of Zucker, get him to the front of the net. Get that line, because you need offense from the Thompson line.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can't deny that if they don't work, it's harder to win games. So put Zucker out there, say, hey, the key here is to get to the front of the net, get in front of that goalie, get pucks to the net, and let's go. So, and not from, you know, 60 feet out. Like, let's get to the middle. Let's go. Let's create from the middle. So I think that's why Zucker is there. And then you put Peterka with Cousins and Benson saying, okay, we know Benny's getting to the front of the net. When Cousins scored the 3-2 goal against Vancouver, that got them closer and got them a point eventually. It was Benson that was in the crease on the backside, but, you know, that's what you got to have. So I think those top two lines being switched like that is just trying to generate more in tight screens, rebound situations, which is not something we've seen at all over the last two or three games.
When you look at especially the youngest of Buffalo's forwards, like, who has the most pressure here to really amplify their offense. Benson, Cousins, Paterka, Kulik, Quinn. Like, and what does that look like and feel like for these five?
I'm going to take Benson out of it because I think what you ask of Zach Benson is the get to the front of the net, get yourself in position. If the production is there, but you are going to open up ice for others to be able to produce. Mm-hmm. Like Cousins coming in and scoring against Kevin Lankinen and the Vancouver Canucks. I think there is going to be now more pressure on Paterka and Quinn. And I think being on separate lines to try to produce. Like J.J. Paterka, 28 goals last year, was producing well early in the year with Thompson and Tuck, and mm-hmm. then it kind of went away. Mm-hmm. And now you're looking at J.J. Paterka, and you say, okay, he still has 16 points in 22 games. He's on a good pace, but he was almost a point a game. And then it just went away. So I think the top two guys, and Jack Quinn, obviously, he's had... The Anaheim game was a good game. The San Jose game was a better game. Like, there was better games, but there's still not enough production right now with only one goal.
And
an empty netter, you're right. In a quarter of the season? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got to be more. So the pressure, I think, is on Paterka and Quinn because Benson and Kulik are in a different boat, and Cousins has been going better of late, so you just got to continue that way.
It may surprise you to know that Nathan MacKinnon has gone 10 games without a goal, and that Casey Mittelstadt's game has dropped off dramatically in the last month. He has been really snake-bitten after a torrid start to the year. Yeah. He has no goals, no assists in the last six. All his production, which was only a handful of points in November, came on the power play, and this is an Avalanche team that is crushed and has been by the injury bug almost since the start of the year. Yeah. Obviously, it's been year over year now, year again, without Gabriel Landeskog. But they were dealing with the Nichushkin absence due to suspension. They were dealing with an unhealthy Lekkonen. And I don't think there's a coach in the league that leans on his top three or four forwards more in time on ice than Jared Bednar. The ice time is astronomical. I mean, Lekkonen plays about almost 22 minutes a yeah. night, and he's not named Rantanen, MacKinnon, Makar. You know what I mean? Like, it's so now what they're dealing with is still Landeskog. Jonathan Drouin's only played five games this year because mm-hmm. of multiple injuries. He's out again. The least remembered hot start to this season belonged to Ross Colton, yeah. who had 8 goals in the first 10 games. He remains out, but he's on the road trip, so the Avs could get a boost at some point. Miles Wood and Josh Manson round out a handful of injuries that are very, very, very significant. When you talk, like, there are so many call-ups and so many relatively inexperienced NHLers on this Avs roster, mm-hmm. and we just saw Buffalo up against it with the Islanders, who were missing 2 of their top 6 defensemen, 3 of their top 9 forwards, including their absolute best player in Matt Barzal. So the point is, like, whatever you think maybe isn't working for you, like, everybody else is dealing with something as dramatic and in some cases worse from a roster personnel standpoint.
Yeah, and they did get Nichushkin back after the suspension, yeah. so that was good.
And he's been good.
He's been good. He's got 3 goals, and 3 of them, like, have come in the last 5 games, so it took him a little while. But you mentioned Manson. He got hurt 2 games ago, missed last game, so it's a recent injury. Mm-hmm. They've dealt with some recent injuries, some long-term injuries. In Colorado, look, they're still just a game over 500. They're in the middle of the pack right now. Most think that Colorado is going to sort it out and factor in, or at least get themselves in the playoff spot mm-hmm. out west, but it's still at a point now where you lose 3 or 4 in a row if you're the Avalanche, and you're looking at that big mountain, you're like, oh, this is going to be tough because of all the injuries mm-hmm. and not getting any bodies back in that way. You mentioned Ross Colton. Like, it was incredible. He was, like, the early Cy Young winner. He mm-hmm. had 8 goals and 1 assist, I think, in
Chris
the first
Kreider still owns it.
Yeah, Kreider's always going to be like that.
Wow, well, it was never as dramatic as it is now. But the point is, it's like everybody's talking about Tage Thompson and how it's hard to win without his production.
Yeah.
10 games, Nathan MacKinnon. 6 games, Casey Mittelstadt. That is your down-the-middle driving force of offense for this team. And so, not surprisingly, they're just a game over 500. Like, it's really hard, no matter how... And by the way, worth noting that 2 things can be simultaneously true. You didn't necessarily believe when I firmly said, I expect Cale Makar to stay in the race for the Art Ross.
Yes.
He's less than a half dozen points out. I think he's very much still in it. However, Quinn Hughes is now closing the gap rapidly as far as the top scoring defenseman in the league. He's only four behind Makar, and we saw firsthand last week why.
Yeah, well, when you make the type of backhand passes that he made right in front of us on our set location, coming by the net and the skating ability and all of that. But I also look at Colorado and their offense that is clicking because they have to. They have to go out there and outscore a lot of the goaltending deficiencies that they've had. Vancouver, they've had their ups and downs, and now, you know, they had some injuries, but Quinn Hughes is going to be that. He's the reigning, you know, Norris Trophy winner. So he's going to gather a lot of that responsibility. But it's funny because the Sabres are a 500 hockey club. Colorado is a game over 500. They're both about as opposite as you can have in the way that they got there. Like, the Sabres are getting great goaltending and great defensive play right now. Lukanen is a 909 save percentage. Two and a half goals against average. In a league where the goals against average has gone up and the save percentage has gone down, he's trending in a really good position. And Colorado is the other way, is they're, you know, 875 or whatever. Like, it's just two different ways of getting there, but they have gone to the same place by using different roads.
Along with 10 to 12 other teams when you look at the overall
standings.
There
is a lot of teams in that same mosh pit.
It's
teams that have injuries in net now. We saw Carolina having injuries. They have to sign Dustin Tokarski. You mentioned Detroit. With the goaltending injuries, there has been a lot of different ways. The Rangers can't win. And man, it was bad yesterday against the New Jersey Devils. It was bad against
Montreal.
Well,
it was bad right from the start, and that's the thing. And that's that's a similarity to the Avalanche, is Colorado's starts to games.
Oh.
They are -16 in first periods this year. Now, granted, they had a brutal first four games of the year. Not unlike San Jose, who had a brutal first nine games of the year. Those are the two worst teams in first period goal differential. But as I've mentioned repeatedly, mostly just to hear myself talk, San Jose, over the last 18 games, has the sixth most points in the NHL. Like, people need to stop dismissing. And if I'm building the trade board or following the insiders, and they're like, I am fascinated by what Mike Greer might be considering here, because you're all of a sudden in a position where 500 or better seems, I don't know, maybe it's doable for San Jose. And because you have so many young players, do you take away any of the veterans for future collateral and trade? Like, Mikael Granlund has been enormous to them.
And their best player.
Well, do you trade him, though, at max value as a pending UFA? And if so, if you're the team taking on Granlund, and this is relevant because Buffalo's having trouble scoring.
Yep.
A lot of other teams clearly have needs, right? And we're now past Thanksgiving. So everybody's, you know, going to say, okay, well, what are you going to do to the... Like, if you... It's impossible if you watch Granlund. It's impossible not to love what he's doing. But he's doing it playing 21 minutes a night in San Jose. So wherever he goes, he's not going to have...
Insert him in the Sabres lineup.
Well, this is
like
the thing.
He's going to play 17 minutes, and is he on power play number one?
So
probably
I don't
not.
Know. Like, but so I'm curious. Like, I want to know your opinion on this.
Question.
Like, what would you give up for Granlund? What would your expectations be? And I'm not making this Buffalo specific, but it can be obviously based on our show and Buffalo's desire for offense.
Well,
right now.
We'll entertain that quickly, because our question at Sabres Live on X was fill in the blank. Blank is the key for the Sabres to generate more offense. The answers are everywhere. You know, get to the middle, add players, get to the net, getting better players. I'm not looking at this as the Sabres need better players. When I look at the numbers and I look at the last seven games, they are last in the league in their expected goals. They're over one goal per game at 5-on-5 that are less in the last seven games. They 8.5 goals less than what they should have scored. Okay? So... But I don't think that's because Tuck isn't a good player, and Thompson isn't a good player, and Paterka isn't a good player, and Dahlin and Power and Byram. I don't think it's the player. I think it's the, okay, let's get ourselves into a structure that allows us to get to the middle. Let's get that mentality, that mindset right now. So with adding new players like Mikael Granlund or whoever, be a big difference? Well, not really if you come in and you play the same way and everybody's just around the circle on the outside and nobody's getting to the middle, because you have the quality to do it. Now, is it because the players don't feel comfortable going to the middle and the coaches are saying, look, this is what we need to do, this is how we got to get there, and nobody goes? Then that maybe is why we see the lines changing so much today for the matchup tonight, is to say, you guys, we've been telling you for five games, get to the middle, and you're not scoring. So we're switching the line to get better energy and add that to your arsenal.
This is an important talking point, and Lindy Ruff has had a lot of good and lasting quotes, comments this year. I don't recall how early on it was, but the outward message from him was, you know, the preseason was really good, right? Remember that? But remember the wording? It was basically, can you do it in the critical moments? Can you deliver when the game is on the line? And so the power play alone could be a reason you look at the last seven games and see a 500 record as opposed to like a 5-2 record, right? Clearly. Could it absolutely change the last two home games?
Yeah.
Against Minnesota and Vancouver. Like 100%.
Five against Vancouver and two against Minnesota.
All you needed was one goal against Minnesota to at least get you a point.
Yeah.
And you had five opportunities against Vancouver, which could have won you the game in regulation, right? So there's a couple more points in the standings. But so I feel like Lindy has been pushing them all along, but this is interesting and maybe a little unexpected, but it brings us right back to what I was talking about earlier as far as the overall goals for per game. It's basically the same as last year. And so there are a lot of core pieces that are expected to score that are producing basically at the same rate, and maybe even less because we're seeing a little more production from the blue line, right? So that's why this is an interesting discussion, and one where you, like, at what point do you change the lines, change how they practiced yesterday, which Lindy talked a lot about, small area stuff, right? Because he wants that completion of plays, and he's feeling like they're not completing certain plays. Well, last year, again, on the heels of the previous year, when, ironically, many of the same players were able to produce, and that's why you're 100% right. Like, it's probably not the players, but because they're capable. We know they're capable. But eventually you then have to do it. You can't just have your status based on prior results. They have to be active results.
And I think that what the game against the Islanders exposed the Sabres more than anything else, it's because the way the Islanders play their game, and they block a lot of shots. There was a game here, was it Minnesota? I think it's Minnesota. They had 32 block shots in the game.
Yes.
The Sabres had 87 shot attempts, 32 block shots. There's two reasons for block shots in the National Hockey League. One is, as a player, your complete lack of knowing there's somebody in front of you and you just shoot it right in that person. Or two, you take too much time. If you're in the slot and you get the puck and you take too long, somebody's going to get in the shot lane and you're going to shoot it and it's going to get blocked. I think what Lindy is trying to work on with the guys and doing small area games is faster.
Right.
Get the puck in the slot, shoot. Don't let them get in your way, because they are getting that shot blocked too often. And right now it's about going back to, you know, Junior Sabres at Harbor Center across the street and seeing the 14U team doing small area games. Why? Because you want to ingrain, put that in them to be faster reacting, faster producing a shot, faster scoring chance. And that's what he's trying to do right now, because the shots are getting blocked. You're getting to the slot, but you're not getting the shot on net because you're taking too long to make the play.
Mention Lecom Harbor Center. We are calling all youth hockey teams, and you could win a sweet night experience for your team with the Sabres Sweet Life Sweepstakes. Promotion is exclusive to youth hockey teams. You can visit sabres.com/enter for your chance to win today. Lots to get to, including the first meeting between these two teams since the trade last year, Middlestat for Byram. And it is Native American Heritage Night, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres, Avs tonight. They'll do it a month from now in Denver as well. That'll be the two-game season series. Speaking of two, it's Bo Byram and Casey Mittelstadt, two of the more prominently talked about individuals for obvious reasons going into tonight.
I talked to Casey Mittelstadt this morning when I walked in. I got to see him, and we talked a little football. He was like, wow, what a game Sunday night. But I meant what a game last night for the Denver Broncos, but he went quickly to talk about the Bills Sunday night.
Well, he's a Vikings guy, though, I think.
I get, but
they're having a pretty good run, too.
But we didn't talk Vikings football. I just thought maybe him being in Denver now would be like following the Broncos. But his head went quickly to the Bills game Sunday night. So I was like, people would be happy to know that Casey's not forgotten, you know, the roots here in Buffalo, and I don't think he'll ever forget. He was beloved by his teammates, by a lot of the fans, and
he loved it here. Yes,
he loved it here. Yeah, he absolutely loved it here. And then, look, people always ask me, "You live in Buffalo?" I'm like, "Yeah," and you should see the amount of alumni players and people that live in Buffalo in the surrounded area. Why? Because it's a great place to play and I think and to live. And Casey really enjoyed that. So yeah, it was good to talk to him a little bit. He went to dinner with a few of the teammates last night. And he's relied upon a lot with what the Colorado Avalanche have to do now in trying to score more goals.
Take us through the trade though.
The trade. Okay, so Casey Mittelstadt.
And what it is currently meaning for both the teams and the individuals involved.
Well, I like the trade. I really like the trade because I think eventually the Sabres were looking at how can we get Darlene Power and somebody else on the back end to really, you know, you look at the championship teams that have had two and three really, really big stud type players that control the play on the back end. And Bo Byram last year, he came in, looked good. I feel like this year he's looked fantastic. He played with Power early in the year, gave Power all that offensive production and confidence. With Darlene now, they look really good offensively especially. So I think it's been great. And it allowed KC to just maybe branch out because it was Thompson, it was Cousins, and then it was Mittelstadt. Like, is he a good 3C type of situation? I know a lot of people right now are going to say, well, probably could be a 2C with the Sabres, Thompson and Mittelstadt, with Cousins not producing as much as the expectations would be. But I think Dylan has played a lot better of late. And Dylan Cousins is, to me, the Thompson Cousins 1-2, down the middle that you would want, and Ryan McLeod comes in really well at three. So I think you could part ways with a Casey Mittelstadt because you had other pieces to come in. A Yuri Kulik, who plays center, was also on the rise. So I think they could see that you could move on from Casey and bring in a player like Bo Byram, and I thought it was a good deal.
Mittelstadt has a three-year deal with the Avalanche. Do you expect Byram to be with the Sabres beyond this year? He'll be a pending RFA.
I think it is going to take and require some work. But yes, I think Bo Byram will remain with the Buffalo Sabres long-term. And I say long-term, this is not going to be a three-year deal for Bo Byram. This would be probably a 6-7, potentially an 8-year deal for Bo Byram. That's what I think would happen at the end of the day. I think that's what Bo Byram wants. He had his 3-year bridge deal and whatever. Now he's looking for, hey, I'm putting up points. I'm playing some of the best hockey in a situation where I'm not buying Kale McCarr and Devontae's. I'm getting the ice time. I'm sure he'd like to play on the power play. But I think that will open a long-term opportunity for him, if not in Buffalo, somewhere else. But I would think the Sabres will explore that.
Do you know what the wind chill is right now?
The wind chill is probably not too bad because it doesn't seem to be too windy. I think the wind is coming in on Thursday, though, so be ready
for
that. Well,
there is a breeze, but it's not affecting the temperature too much unless you're right inside KeyBank Center, where it's clearly colder than what it is one block up Washington Street. So
it always happens, and for those that watch us when we are at KeyBank Center, at about 12:20 to 12:30, when the final team, like Colorado today, has gotten off the ice after the morning skate and the Zamboni has cleaned up the ice and everything is supposed they now crank up the cold. So
I got
that
news
the
for
ice
you.
Is
it was brutal at 10 a.m. So this is my public service announcement to make sure you come prepared tonight.
Yeah, but I will tell you this. When, you know, people come in tonight and there's bodies in the building, it warms up. It actually warms up a little bit more. But, yeah, 12:30 every game day, the cold cranks up so that the ice is in good situation, in good position for tonight.
Apparently, Marcus Foligno didn't absorb the Linus Ullmark Sabres live.
The bad juju?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no.
He made an appearance on our last show, and look what happened.
Yeah, Minnesota ended up winning 1-0 that night. And
although he's not much of an empty net player.
No, he is not. Because when he
got
gets
robbed
an
of
empty
a goal.
Net goal, they call an icing that shouldn't have been called. But no, you look around the NHL right now. There is teams that are rolling, and we saw Minnesota.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
We saw Minnesota. They're one of the best.
L.A., Philly, Pittsburgh, Washington, Florida, Minnesota.
Pittsburgh is surprising. They got Florida coming in.
Why is it surprising? Sidney Crosby, man.
Yeah, but at the same time, look at the way they played early in the year, and it was like, man, they looked dysfunctional.
Right.
They didn't get any goaltending. It was bad. And now they're putting together. Do I trust a Mike Sullivan to be a good coach and to sort it out at some point? Yes. Do I think they have the pieces? No. But, you know, with Sidney Crosby leading the way, I think anything's possible. But, yeah, they've won now, what, 4 in a row? Looking to go 5 tonight?
They've won 3, looking for 4 against a team that has also won 3 in a row and is the reigning champs in the Florida Panthers. The Oilers have won 3 in a row. They're up against a Vegas team that lost 6-0 to Utah. Of course, Utah promptly turned around and lost since. So not sure what to expect from the hockey club other than the fact that they will be well-rested when they come here Saturday afternoon because they don't play again. They'll have 4 days of rest before coming in to Buffalo on Saturday afternoon.
Chicago's still a bad team.
Chicago is not worth talking about. The Islanders.
But I'm going to just mention quickly that it's funny. You watch Chicago, and there's a couple of individuals on the Hawks that I'm like, oh, I like that player. I like that player. But overall, they're a bad team, and Connor Bedard is not really enjoying himself the same way that he did last year. And he's looking at Macklin Celebrini and San Jose and Matvei Michkov and Philly, and he's like, these guys seem to be having a lot more fun than I am.
Okay, it's test time.
Test time.
It's been 5 days since I've been able to do this to you. This will validate whether you've been doing your homework or not.
Probably not. I was watching a lot of football this weekend, but yes.
Which team is technically the hottest over the last 6 games, and it includes the player on the longest active point streak?
The hottest team in the last
six
games is Vegas?
No.
Okay.
They just lost to Utah 6-0, dude.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it could be 5-1 in the last 6 games.
That would take them out of the equation because 5-0-1 are the Columbus Blue Jackets. No one has scored more goals at home this year than them, and Zach Werenski is averaging 2 points a game on the blue line over an 8-game point streak. I can't stress enough how great this is to see and how tonight on the heels of last week at home against Calgary is going to be
emotional.
It's unreal. The Gaudreau family is there in Calgary for this game. Guy was on the ice with the Flames yesterday at practice. But sisters, parents, wife, children of Johnny and obviously Matthew.
I'm telling you this, Duffer. I think there needs to be an award for what Sean Monahan is doing right now for the Columbus Blue Jackets perspective and the Gaudreau family and Meredith and the kids and everything. He's just been unbelievable. And I think there needs to be like a Sean Monahan award sometime.
There have been so many people that have done the right thing in Columbus. And that's why I am so happy to see them having these results right now.
Yep.
And it's not like you get a lot of training in a situation.
Well, hopefully you don't.
No, but life experience. Yeah, but I mean, I said this at the time. Like, Don Waddell's had to go through this.
Yeah.
Right? And he took over. He made, you know, moves to almost just essentially fill in the roster. That's not to disrespect anybody that came in, but you know what I mean, right? Like, you can't replace Johnny Gaudreau. And you were dealing with making a Patrick Laine trade. Like, yeah. You know, there's so much. And by the way, Laine makes his season tonight. Debut for Montreal tonight.
But you know, it was like Don Waddell because of Atlanta, right?
Yes.
The Heatley Snyder and all of that. Like, he had gone through some heartbreaks with Atlanta.
Right.
Have gone through it before.
Right. And so sometimes this can all get lost in sports commentary, whatever. But Don said a while back, you know, like, we'll be okay when Kent Johnson returns. Kent Johnson, I don't think anybody knows this. He has points in every game he's played.
Yeah.
It's not a point streak because it was interrupted by injury. He has 12 points in 9 games, and his recent return has coincided with the Jets. And I'm like, holy cow. Like, talk about in your first year as manager, knowing, like, what players are capable of. And you heard me say, wait, probably you got tired of hearing me say it the last 2 years. The reason Columbus struggled was because they were decimated like unlike any other team with injuries. And often it was Zach Werenski. Zach Werenski is so important.
Yeah.
He's now in the race. In my opinion, he's going to, if he can stay healthy, he's in the hunt for the Norris all year. It's unbelievable.
He was great at the start of the season. I watched a few games. I'm like, whoa, this is a different Zach Werenski. I called our good friend Jean-Luc Grandpierre,
who does
the studio analyst for Columbus. And I said, wow, what's going on? Werenski looks different. He goes, he lost a lot of weight and he's in, like, decided to go a different approach because of the injuries and everything. And he's looked really, really good. The big thing for me when I look at Columbus, the last time the Columbus Blue Jackets had success, they had John Torella as their head coach. Mm-hmm. And then they went the Brad Larsen way. And look, Brad Larsen was a good hockey person, but first time as a head coach in the National Hockey League. And, it, you know, he was trying to develop them into young Sillinger and Ken Johnson and Fantilli and whatever, like these young players, and it didn't go where they wanted to go. Last year they had Pascal Vincent after the Mike Babcock thing happened. They got stability behind the net. They brought in Dean Evason, who he had had success in Minnesota. He's a good, hard type of coach. And Columbus is benefiting from him.
Yeah.
The same way that I think the Sabres, if they can really kind of get themselves going the right way, what Lindy Ruff is trying to do here. This is a different team than we had the last few years. Coaching matters. Coaching matters in the NHL. And I think Columbus and Buffalo and others, right, are proving that coaching matters. Like New Jersey, Sheldon Keefe, coaching matters.
We got a break. Back after this on Sabres Live.
Stop sign.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Mike Ramsey, Mark Stainhouse, Ozzy Osbourne celebrating birthdays on this day. What say you about a minute to go in the show?
Well, you know what? I got an interesting comment on social media about, you know, blank is something to get the Sabres offense going again. And Jason here says, play to the team's strength. Focus on the rush attack and skate the puck into the zone. And that's something that early in the year, rush chances, there was a lot of them. We're not seeing as many of them of late. And maybe that is no Tage Thompson and no Jordan Greenway and, you know, a few guys that are missing. But I'd like to see the Sabres taking a few more of those quick transition and rush chances attack. I think it can't always be the way you're going to win games, but right now you got to find a little bit more of your identity and get those rush chances. So good on Jason to recognize that, and that was on my notes too. I didn't get to it.
Who's your go-to guy for our talking point tomorrow on Sabres Live?
It will be Jason Zucker.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think with Thompson and Tuck, that they're probably factoring on 2 goals tonight.
Well, we obviously know what they're up against, and that is a top line that has MacKinnon, Lehkonen, and Rantanen on the other side. Can't wait to see you at 6:30 for our pregame coverage on MSG.